You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Nine 12 on a Tuesday. McNamara here, joined by Musselman. We were just talking about great microwave food that we've eaten in our lives, and Mike just made some kind of burger. Where was your burger from?
Costco. It's the Angus cheeseburgers from Costco. Man, they're good.
What so is it already cooked and you just heat it or what?
3 minutes on 30% power, and then like 50 seconds on full power. And Whoa. They're just perfect.
That's some gourmet instructions, man. I'm not lying to you.
Well, Tina cracks up because she's like, I don't know anybody that's so damn picky like you when it comes to food, but yet loves like frozen microwavable cheeseburgers. I'm like, oh, cheeseburgers, microwave. She looks at me like, yeah. She goes, I don't get it. You get so picky with high end food, and then you know, and I'm like, oh, there's nothing like a carnival corn dog, you know, or catfish on a stick, deep fried catfish on a stick. Oh, man, that's the best.
You know what? Mike and I were talking, like, you know, when you come out of the field, you would essentially eat anything.
Eat anything.
Yeah. I mean, you're so hungry.
Turd with frosting.
You would eat a turd with frosting. And so, I remember at IOC, we used to have hot dogs. We used to have we'd bring in packs of hot dogs with buns. And you'd throw a hot dog in and you'd microwave it until it split. For me, it's about 43 seconds. And then ketchup and mustard. I could eat those forever. And they, in my opinion, they tasted incredible. As long as you had something cold and carbonated, where's Mac? He's eating hot dogs. He's eating hot dogs.
Yeah.
He's sitting by the microwave. He's got the microwave hot dog factory going. And they were, oh, man, they tasted so good to me. I don't know why. And people are going, that's disgusting. No, it wasn't.
No. Mine was my favorite. My favorite still to this day is a three-fisted corn dog sandwich.
Wait.
You know what a three-fisted corn dog sandwich is?
I kind of have an idea, but why don't you give us a footnotes on the three-fisted corn dog sandwich?
Yes. The three-fisted corn dog sandwich dates back to probably 1986, 87. Southern California at the Del Mar Fair.
Oh.
Young Marine Lance Corporal, maybe Corporal, I don't remember. Mike Musselman was kind of buzzed, was looking for a good meal, and lo and behold, hand-dipped corn dogs.
Wait,
there at the stand.
Were you being yourself, or were you being your assumed identity? What was your assumed, your jersey name?
Mark Simmons. Yeah, I thought it was Mark Simmet at that point. So Mark Simmet at the Del Mar County Fair down in San Diego, getting a little buzz on. All of a sudden, catches the whiff of the perfection of corn battered, like a cornmeal batter corn dog being bubbled in old vegetable oil, animal fat. So I walked over there. I said, three, please. And I remember someone saying, how are you going to eat three? And I was like, watch and learn, boys, watch and learn. And if you make a fist with your left hand, right, and in between your knuckles, you have three slots. So I shoved the sticks down between my pinky and my ring finger, and my ring finger and my middle finger, and my middle finger and my index finger.
Okay.
Doused the tops with mustard. And walked away with my three-fingered corn dog sandwich, biting on the first one. And the nice thing about that is you can eat all three at one time or one at a time. still matter, but you're holding three corn dogs in your fist. Hence the name, three-fisted corn dog sound.
Talk to me about, for those of you who don't know, if you want to go to a quality fair, Del Mar Fair is pretty good.
Del Mar is a good fair.
Yeah. Where the surf meets the turf, okay? It's a good fair.
It's small, but yet you get there and you're like, it's one of those fairs that you're in Southern California, you're in Del Mar, for Christ's sakes. I mean, there's million-dollar homes, just stone throw away, right? Upper crust of society, people posh and everything else. You get to Del Mar, and you're like, dude, they bust these weirdos in. They have to.
They can't live.
There's no way that these guys live, you know, within driving distance of Del Mar Fair. And you're like, nope. This is what happens when the lights stay on. The cockroaches come out all the time.
It's something about something about county fairs, man. I'm telling you, there's people that go to a county fair that I think aren't part of our normal society. Maybe they go to Walmart, but it's, you go to a county fair and you see some
serious Cletus and Rufus, and man, you see some crazies come out.
And Del Mar is not supposed to have Cletus and Rufus, but they're there. It's like, I thought the same thing. I used to think, Mike, imagine this. I thought that in North Dakota. Right? Like, where are these people coming from? Like, are these people getting bussed down here from Canada? They don't live
around. Just to make it fairish, like to add to the atmosphere of fairish.
Yeah.
You know, they put want ads in like these crazy places in Manitoba, Canada, going, all right, we're looking for toothless, all these crazy, you know, wearing overalls, a straw hat with
or
front teeth missing and can play the banjo. And the mouth part.
Or halter tops and short shorts with a lot hanging over. Right? Either one works for us. And you're like, what?
Or the pink half-cut cowboy jersey with the Daisy Dukes with cowboy boots on, like I saw at Walmart in Lake Forest.
Oh, my God. No, the county fair is crazy. Let's talk about other microwave food that you like.
Burritos.
All right, your favorite. We were just talking. Burritos. I don't know.
I can't think of the name. They sell it only at the PX in Camp Pendleton.
I know, but you could get them.
And the thing is,
well, they sold them at 7-Eleven. They were either red or green. Remember the red or green?
I don't remember seeing them. But they're as long as your knee to your ankle. And they're almost as wide. I mean, and they barely fit in a microwave. I mean, you got to crunch the sides up.
Oh, God.
And, I mean, they're ridiculous. You used to eat them like, you know, you're like, I don't know. They're crazy.
But when you're hungry, nothing tastes better.
Yeah. Or, let's see, what else favorite microwave? That's about it.
Yeah.
But, like I said, Mac, I mean, right now, I'm so hungry. If I knew there was a fair, I'd be going for a three-fisted corn dog sandwich right now.
If you could find a fair, that's funny. That's funny. No, the Del Mar Fair.
You know
fairs
cool?
I always enjoyed fairs because you know it's the most of them are county fairs, right? And then and so there was always the 4-H people were always there. It was their kind of big event where they went to show livestock and things and they had done. I'll tell you, I went to a couple of them in Northwest Minnesota because I was a personality up there, and they would put on these displays of how like a farm worked in 1870. And let me just tell you, the stuff that farmers do with a single engine, right, and one rod that spun, and using that one rod, spin 15 other rods, and do all this shit with hay.
With all these belts. And everything we belt, like, it had the belt drive on one side, and that belt would drive this top shaft in the garage. That would drive, like, there'd be like 50 belts on top of that all going to different things within the garage, you know, your workshop.
Right. And you watched how 150 years ago they used a steam engine, okay, and with a single you know, drive shaft, and what they did with hay, what they did with all their crops, how they baled it, how they did all this stuff, and you're like, wow, that's pretty impressive. Pretty impressive. Yeah. Pretty cool. So
yeah, life's not as easy as it is now, Buck. If you're listening, back in those days, you'd have to actually have like a steam coal turbine type thing out back. You're shoveling coal, horses doing on a carousel, keeping everything powered. Yeah.
Yeah, or just
tough back then.
Just plowing a field behind a team of horses.
Right.
Welcome to Men's Town, man. You are not that right. Is yeah, that's man's work.
Hey, you know what I just thought of though?
What?
When we were talking about three fisted corn dog sandwiches, is I never got to do this because these weren't big back then. But now with all the different types of deep fried foods, you could do a meal in one hand. So you could do like deep fried cheese sticks, yeah, like as an appetizer and with the one fist. Right. Then your corn dog or your catfish on a stick. And then your last one could be deep fried cheesecake on a stick. See? And then have your drink in your right hand. Start with your hors d'oeuvres, go to your entree, and then finish with the dessert. Dude, I'm on to something.
You know what? You could turn that into like a TV show, I think. You could do a pilot for that.
I bet you I could do a walk-in restaurant where you had to walk out. And then I'd make like a grease drip cloth that go over your fist with three holes through it. So you can just wipe, and then you just wipe it, because you'd have a drink in your hand, right? So picture this. You got this cloth over your fist, right? You got this cloth over your fist that's designed, and it has the thing that says three-fisted sandwiches. And then you're sitting there and you just wipe your cheek on it with your meal hand, because your drink hand is always here. You never have to do anything. You'd never have to pick anything up. Just eat, drink, and be merry.
Here's an email. Mac,
I'm patenting this right now. This is my idea.
I know you're not a big drinker. Is the Gunner a big drinker? Are you a big drinker?
A big drinker of what?
A booze.
Oh, I didn't. Water, yeah.
No, booze, alcohol.
No. You know I'm not.
Well, I know, but that was this is what the email says.
I drink maybe a drink a month, maybe.
Really? Yeah. I don't even know that if you average mine, I don't even know. But see, once I have a drink and I'm like doing that, I'm not afraid to have a few if I'm having a good time.
Oh, I won't drink them.
Yeah. If I'm having a glass of wine, I'll have a couple glasses of wine. You know, but I don't have beer in my house. I don't like hard liquor. If I drink hard liquor, I'll have a gin and tonic. So, but I don't drink very often. When did you stop drinking? Because you're not afraid to have a good time. Were you ever, like when you were a young Marine, were you a drunkard? How did you do that?
Now, if I told you that I was very... Why are you already laughing? You don't even know what I'm going to talk about.
Cause you
think that I'm going to try and tell you that maybe I was, you know, not a big drinker back then. You're laughing like, yeah, right. No, I was, I was just like any other dumb ring. I drank a lot. I drank, not to the point where I'd pass out, but I drank till I was soft. But here's what happened though. I learned real quick what drinking could get you into. You know, the problems.
How?
Not because I experienced them, because friends of mine did, and it destroyed them. And I was like, dude, I'm not gonna let that happen to me. You know, not gonna let that happen to me. You know, I lost a lot of buddies, DUIs.
Right.
You know, kill themselves on motorcycles, or were the victim of someone else drinking and driving and then, you know, wrecking. I mean, I broke my neck in a car accident in 1987 in August on Pacific Coast Highway when a drunk driver hit us. So I learned real quick, and I think that was kind of like a turning point. I was like, dude, I can't do this. Because I'm like anybody else. You know, anybody that says, well, I can control myself when I'm drunk, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
No, you can't.
As you
said.
The
only time you can control yourself is by not drinking.
As you said.
Not getting to that point.
Most people, I was talking about this earlier. Actually, I was having a conversation with my daughter over the weekend about the common theme of the people that are in our extended family who struggle with life. What's the one common theme?
Alcohol.
Yep. Alcohol that leads to drugs,
yeah.
Then some permutation of that.
Financial irresponsibility.
Yeah. And then it goes from there.
Problems with marriage,
right.
Everything.
Right. And Colleen's 14, so her friends are starting to go down that road. And I said, hey,
right.
Look, get new friends. I'm telling you. Because, first of all, I'm not having it. Okay, and you'll get caught, and so there'll be consequences with me. But let me just tell you, I would just tell you, be smarter. Look at the people that destroy their lives, and at the root of it is alcohol. A year ago, I had the commandant on. I need to get him back on. But a year ago, I don't know how it even came up, and it might have been a question like, you know, when you talk to young Marines, do you give them life advice? And he said, you know, Mac, one of the things I've learned in my life. I tell them, look, if I could give you a piece of life, stop drinking. It destroys so many lives. It destroys so many careers. Stop drinking. You don't need it. You can go have a good time without it. Learn how to do that because it's just not worth it. And I said, really? He said, yeah. He said, God. He said, I go all over the Marine Corps. You know how many Marines I talked to that destroyed their career, great careers, destroyed it because of alcohol? He says it's terrible. It's all. He says it's awful. So it's interesting. So, but so many people they never learned the lesson you're talking about. They went through the same experiences you did, Mike, and never learned it. Never learned it.
See, I was lucky. I never got hurt. I never hurt anybody else, and so I learned. I was a lucky one, and I say this a lot because I am. I'm truly blessed. Because I was able to learn through other people's misfortunes and see it for what it was really worth. And it really struck a chord with me because I really, it changed my life. And I'm glad it did because, dude, I'm telling you, I mean, I was always like that close, you know, that close.
Well, let me tell you, the Marine Corps that you and I joined,
it was acceptable.
Oh, fighting and drinking. It was, and again, I tell the story.
Yeah.
When they started writing people up for DUIs, when they were coming back on base, there was like this minor, it wasn't a revolt because there was nothing you could do about it, but the Marine Corps was indignant. What? We're going to get written up for being drunk? Like, what in the hell is the Marine Corps coming to? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, shit, there goes the Corps.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I remember when the Corps was a good Corps, we'd be able to drink and drive.
We took care of each other.
Run over mailboxes.
Yeah.
Hit the telephone pole. And then, you know, no consequences. Those were the good old days.
Yeah. No shit. That's no exaggeration either.
But when I was a young little devil pup, back in those days, the NCOs and the senior guys would show up. Rip at formation. They drink during the day. They used to smoke pot in the field. You know, it was a whole different Marine Corps. And I'm the dumbass, you know, when they're like, hey, PFC, yes, Corporal, you want a drink? Want a beer? No, Corporal, it's 9 o'clock in the morning. Oh, you pussy. You know, come here, you pussy. I gotta go, Corporal. You damn narc. Come here.
That was it, man.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, look, he's not being funny, and he's not making it up.
Don't trust Muscleman. He doesn't drink beer at 9 in the morning with us.
Right.
Yep. You know, you want to be a real Marine? No, I don't, Corporal. Are you sure? Then you gotta drink beer at 9 in the morning. Take shots at noon. Nope. I'm good.
Yeah. And hey, don't forget, and on Friday, as soon as you become a staff NCO, you got to be at the lingerie show at the staff club.
What are you doing, boot? Ironing my camis and spitting on my boots for Monday. Damn, kiss ass, suck ass, bitch. Yeah, I'm serious.
I know you are.
Hey, come here and look at this boot right here, ironing his cami.
Yeah, and the hazing things that we did, everybody, we did them in front of God and everybody. Nobody hid.
I got pink bellied on a picnic table midday at 32nd Street, like lunchtime. Like all these people eating lunch at picnic tables, and they hoist my ass up there, put me on a picnic table, pull up my shirt so my stomach's exposed, and they all get their hands out, you know, and they're holding you down, and they start smacking you from the top of your arms. Everybody's got a space in your stomach and your chest and your abdomen all the way down, and everybody's like slapping you, singing a song. We are 81 Raiders of the night. Crazy song, bitches. We gather up tonight. We catch the later enemies. Smoke a piece of glass. We take the rusty bayonet and shove it up your ass. Howdy, 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 howdy. Who the fuck are we? We are 81s of Weapons Company. Hey. And they don't sing it that song that fast. And I still remember today because the penalty for not remembering the song is you get it again.
Oh.
So I remember that song being taught to me in 1985, and it still scares me when I can't sing. I've never thought of it, but like the fact of, man, if I just, what was, oh yeah. Because if you were asked, hey boy, hey boot, what's our song? Sir Corporal, our song is We Are 81s, Raiders of the Night. We're crazy son of bitches. We have to win a fight. We catch the enemies with a broken piece of glass. We take your rusty bayonet and shove it up your ass. Heidi, 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 heidi. Who the fuck are we? We are 81s of Weapons Company. Hey. And if you didn't get the hay in the last part either, you're done.
Right. All of it. All of it. Because, look, don't give them any reason to do what they want to do. Okay?
Yeah.
And even if you did it right, you still got stared at. You're lucky, boy.
Yep.
You're lucky.
So I elected not to do it. And then once I got pink bellied, you know, then you could pink belly others. And so when the new guys started coming in, the new breed of boots, and I'm not a boot anymore, I'd been on employment or two. You know, the new guys, I didn't act like that. I didn't go, come here, boot, I'm going to pink belly you. No. You know, like, hey, Muscleman, get over, we're going to pink belly this new guy, Peterson. I'm like, no, I'm good. Pussy. Come here, you narc. Yeah.
Swimming upstream. That's not, that doesn't make the boys happy. Doesn't make the inmates happy.
No.
Interesting. Nope. Interesting. How do we get here from microwave food? Microwave foods and county fairs?
Because we're talented.
We have AD.
People cannot do transitions like you and I. We are professional transitioners. We can transition any conversation. We could talk about nuclear theory, quantum physics, and then end up talking about aardvarks.
We'd struggle with some of that. Here's an email. You know, this is a pretty good topic. Your favorite microwavable food. A lot of people turn their nose up to microwavable food, but I will tell you this. In the construction business, we don't. We eat like you guys eat. I want a second what Max said. I keep a thing of hot dogs, buns with some condiments in the back of my truck. And I'll bust those things out and I will heat that hot dog up any way that I can. I've heated them up using propane torches.
Yeah.
In any other way that I could. I've got foil that I'll use, put a hot dog in, pop the hood of my engine and throw it on the metal.
Oh, I've done carburetor burritos before. Those things are freaking good. Muffler, like muffler burritos?
Right.
Oh.
So, it goes on.
We used to do that all the time.
So, to all you prissies out there who don't do that, stick it up your ass. I love this kind of food, man. And 7-Eleven used to be the best place to get it. And I do remember the red burritos and the green burritos. That stuff was awesome. You look at the food 7-Eleven has now, that dried out pizza that they have in that case, that stuff's nasty. Give me those old burritos. Give me those old burritos. Oh, my God.
And the broken microwave where you didn't know what the setting was, you just guessed. You'd stop it every 15 seconds and just touch it. She was hot. Yep.
And then you'd get this thing out, right? And it would be kind of wet, and you couldn't wait. Oh, man, this is going to be great. This is going to be great. And Mike's right. Those things were like a foot long, too. Oh, my God.
No, they were longer than a foot, dude. I'm telling you, they were real long. They were crazy long.
Hold on. Here's a text message. Matt, could the gunner go over the heating instructions that he uses for the hamburger? That sounded pretty advanced.
3 minutes at 30% power, and then 50 seconds at full power.
Did you make that up, or did that come with the instructions? Tell the truth.
It's like a variation of what came with it. This was through trial and error of many cheeseburgers. So this is what I found out to be like the best, where it's just the cheese is bubbly and the bun is nice and creamy sauce, but it's not too hot to touch. But the meat is just feels like it's just been off the grill. And they do it in such a way that the patty looks like it was hand formed. I mean, it looks just like the real thing. I mean, it looks like a good burger. And let me tell you a story real quick.
Yeah.
And we're going to transition again.
All right.
So, you know, making hamburger patties is an art form.
Is it?
Okay? Mm-hmm. And no one does it better than me, myself, and I. Because, and even my daughter looked over at me just now and said, yeah, you're right, Dad.
Oh, my God. But, no, stop it. Megan did say that.
No, and here's why. Because I hate going over to someone's house, especially a good friend, and you get a burger from them, and it's a freaking golf ball. It's round, you know? It's got a spherical shape to it. You're like, you don't want to make him feel bad because this is his barbecue. It's his day. But, you know, you're looking at him going, dude, how can you, as a man, accept this thing coming off the grill?
Yeah.
Burgers are not supposed to be round. They're supposed to be flat. You know, so you take your time. And what I do is I take individual sheets of parchment paper, right?
Right.
And then I take about maybe 3/4 of a pound or a half a pound.
Okay.
I mean, they're big burgers. But I use 80-20, you know, 80% beef to 20% fat to get that nice fat consistency.
Right.
But I press them all the way up so they're nice and flat. Not super thin, but about as thin as my pinky. Is wide.
Wait.
And then I press them all out. Wait a minute. And then I form the edges.
As thin as your pinky is wide? So, like.
Well, I mean, like the thickness of your pinky.
Okay, the thickness.
Not the length. Not the length of it, no.
So
if you put your pinky down on the ground.
Do you have fat fingers or normal fingers or what? How fat are your fingers?
I have normal fingers.
Okay. All right.
I have normal fingers.
Okay.
And then what I do then is I press it all out, and then I use my other hand, my guide hand, my rounding, I call it my rounding hand. I have my right hand's my pressing hand. My rounding hand is doing like the Navy salute. It's kind of like an arc, a half moon, you know? Half moon salute that Navy gives you, right?
Got it.
Not straight out.
Okay, hold on.
Crescent moon.
Yeah. He's talking about the angle. He's talking about the angle of his thumb to his hand, okay? Everybody.
Yeah, it's a crescent moon. It's a half. The half arc. Mm-hmm. I'll take a picture and send it to you if anybody needs, like, but, and we call it the Navy salute. Hey, skipper, but, so.
Wait.
The arc.
Can we talk about the Navy salute? Just, and it starts at the bill of their cover, and then it, for some reason, it goes, like,
it's
towards the sky.
Towards you. Like, it's pushed out. Yeah, pushed out. Like, pushed out. Hey, skipper.
Hey.
Starts out at the bill. And it, like, gets pushed down to the ground. Hey, skipper, like, that, you know, like I'm tossing you something, too. There you go. What's up, chief?
Oh, my God.
Oh, man, crazy.
Anyway,
but
keep going.
Okay, so my left hand is my crescent shaper. So I turn the burger using my crescent shaper for my rounding, and I press out with my hand all the way out.
Yeah.
And the burgers I always make much bigger because they're going to shrink. Right? And even if they, you know, when they overhang by the bun, like a quarter of an inch or a half inch, even better. Because that guarantees you're going to get meat in your first bite, not bun. Because no one likes to get bun in the first bite.
Okay, do you push your thumb down in the center? Because a lot of people do that.
No, I don't use my thumbs. Or just my four fingers. I'm pressing.
You're pressing with the forefinger in the center?
Yeah.
Okay.
The four fingers.
Okay.
But here's the key.
Four fingers.
Okay?
Okay.
Here's the key.
Yep.
Okay?
Okay.
So once I get that all rounded, so if you look at my burger, it's flat in the center, but the edges almost look like they're pizza crust. They're a little bit higher, rounded. Okay.
Got it.
Okay, because I want the flavor when the fat and the juices, right. I don't want it to flow out. I want it to pool into the middle of the burger.
Got it.
Okay, so then after I do everything, I do the three-hole punch. What's the three-hole punch you're thinking? I take my three fingers on my right hand, my middle finger, my ring finger, and my... index finger, I make a little triangle, a three-pointed triangle, right?
Right.
So now I got three.
A lot of
And then I punch.
A lot of geometry in here. I'm just saying, we're going to lose a lot of Marines.
And then I take my three-hole finger punch, that triangle, and I punch three holes through the burger.
Ooh.
Copied that from White Castle, because White Castle used to have five holes. I do three.
Wait a minute.
You need the five.
You punch a hole in the burger?
Three holes. One, two, three. In the form of a triangle.
Hmm.
It's still burger. I'm not taking anything away from you. It's just that you got three cooking holes that ensure perfect cooking throughout the whole burger.
And so when the... all right, couple text messages. Hey, didn't we stop cussing on the show during the third hour, or was that for just one day?
That was a song. I had to sing it with the song. I apologize.
Okay. All right. Next one. I know this probably isn't fair food, but how about the fried bologna sandwich when we were kids?
Oh,
that's all, yeah.
If
you've never had fried bologna sandwich, I had a woman, Mike is familiar with this part of California, but a Mexican lady that lived down the street from us that my mom was great friends with, her name's Pearl Galbraith. Pearl is my Las Cuantas Milpas. She could make food like you, unbelievable. Anyway, Pearl introduced me to fried bologna sandwiches. Yeah, exactly. If you don't know what we're talking about, you missed out, okay? You missed out. Fried bologna sandwiches are awesome.
Yeah. Or grilled bologna sandwiches are just as good.
What do you mean grilled? Do you put it like a grilled cheese, but you put bologna in there?
No, on the grill. You know, take the big cut
of the grill
of bologna and then just grill them so you get the grill marks on there.
Right.
Oh,
and then
put a little barbecue sauce on it.
And then somebody sent me, why don't you use one of these? Somebody sent me a picture of big onion man, Dave in Vacaville. And don't bother me that there's no more onions in Vacaville. And, oh, by the way, Pearl.
There is no Vacaville onions anymore. But.
Pearl was from Yuba City, California, home of, her father was a farm worker up there. And,
on the Yuba River.
Yeah, on the Yuba River. Farm country, man.
Old country.
Yeah. The don't you have a device that you use to make hamburger patties?
Yeah, I don't use it though. I like my hand.
All right. So you're a true chef.
Yeah, I consider myself that too. Thank you. So, but you gotta do the three holes, and then what I do is, if you order cheese on your burger,
yeah.
And I'm not worried about the grill marks.
Right.
But if you are going to get no cheese, you're just going to get a burger, then, because I cook them on high at first, grill's nice and hot, I'll put that burger on there and get the nice sear on it.
Right.
And then after about 2 minutes, what I do then is I rotate the burger about 90 degrees.
Oh.
So I get the cross checker, you know.
That is.
Burn sear marks on
it. Yeah, that's a sign of a chef.
That's a sign of professionalism.
Exactly. When do you? At what point do you apply cheese? A lot of people don't apply cheese until
at the very end
after they take it off the grill.
So do I. I right when the burger's done, I put the cheese on, and then I let the cheese naturally just melt and conform like lava.
Like what?
Lava.
Like lava.
You know how slow lava moves?
Yeah, I see it on TV every night. It's like eating up. It's eating up Hawaii.
Lava. That's how my cheese looks like. Lava. Slow moving. Lava. You're learning a lot today.
You know, yeah, you're in the giving mode. It doesn't happen very often.
Yeah.
You're in the giving mode. But we're talking about, we've been talking about things that you like to talk about. Booze, drinking. And no, the Marine Corps experience of drinking, which is different. You know, but
grilled onions, grilled sweet onions or Bermuda onions. Oh, I can eat those right off the grill.
Yeah. What's your favorite?
They don't eat hardly make it on the burger. They make it in my mouth.
What's your favorite grilling vegetable?
Mushrooms.
Yeah. Mine's zucchini. Mine's zucchini. I love
that too. Zucchini and squash.
Zucchini
we
tastes
do that a lot.
Yeah, tastes awesome. I mean, you know, and grilling it's so easy. Cut them, you know, put whatever you want on top of them. Throw them on.
Put some oil in them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Douse them with some extra virgin olive oil.
Right.
Season them. And then put them on the grill.
Yeah.
But see, you got to do the cross marks on those because those show.
Yeah. No, you're right about that.
You got to do the. But do the diamond ones, not the squares, because the diamond looks better.
Oh, diamonds. You got to pay attention for that. You can't just walk away.
But it's all about, like I said, presentation.
Presentation. You know what you are? You're like a ghetto chef. You're not like a real chef, but you're like a, I don't know what you're a different kind of chef.
Dude, but then I go back to my favorite of all time is my three-finger-fisted corn dog sandwich.
You know, you're glorifying a drunken meal and making it sound like it's all.
No, bad. It's not a drunken meal. I'd eat that 24/7.
But you originally
if ate my body could take it.
Yeah.
Could you imagine eating that every day for a month? What your body would look like? Oh, my God.
You would. Your body
just in my belly.
Your body when the age that you were doing that. I mean, think about that. You ate anything you wanted.
I was burning that shit out. Yeah.
By noon.
My metabolism was running at peak performance back then.
And then pile on top of what you did for a living, you know? And then
now,
did you eat?
My belly, I say it.
Would you,
like the fat, what's that guy's name from?
Fat. Fat Bastard.
Fat Bastard. You'd be Fat Bastard. I love some good cheesecake.
Did you, when we were in the Marine Corps, when MREs first came out?
No, I was in the MRE. I was there when they were already there, the brown ones.
Yeah, I mean, but they were newly introduced to the Marine Corps. They hadn't been around that long. Let me put it this way.
The canned sea rats were still there.
They were not nearly what they are today, yes?
No. I still have
MREs.
One that I saved, dude.
An MRE. MREs now are legit. I mean, you could, like, eat them and
live. Let me open up my time capsule, step inside, and pull out this MRE. And what one is it? It is the brown bag with the black letters. And this is a meal ready to eat. Meal number 6.
Which is?
Chicken a la king.
Oh. I'm not a chicken a la king guy.
Accessory packet C.
Oh, what's in it? What's in
the made in McAllen, Texas.
Of course. Everything that's good is made in Texas. I hated MREs. They were horrible. They were horrible.
You know, when they got rid of I bet you this one still has the ketchup packets in it. Those were the best ketchup ever. You used to make a sauce when you used to get the Frankfurters, the witch's fingers, right? and you get the witch's fingers and beans. I'd concoct the sauce with this ketchup and a little bit of the coffee. You know, you grind it, put that in there, and you get this nice mocha ketchup-y, you know, put a little bit of sugar in there, make it a little sweeter because the ketchup was a little tangy.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
There was a whole MRE cookbook that came out so you could learn
dip
how to
your
eat.
You used to dip the witch's fingers inside the sauce.
But some of that stuff was, I mean, chicken loaf. I mean, some of it was disgusting. You couldn't even eat it. You could get, like, if you gave it to your dog, he'd just look at you and go, what's that?
I wonder if this is still good.
What do you... Of course it is. It's like, it'll survive anything.
I got a date on here. You know what the date is?
What? 2080.
No. 8/14/85.
Oh, that old?
I think this was my first MRE.
Get out.
Yeah, this must have been my first... No, I'm serious. 8/14/85. I was in SOI when I got this.
And you saved it?
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't you eat it? Weren't you hungry?
No, I think it was cool. I mean, they come in a. If you had enough MREs, you can make a raft out of these things. And then eat your raft. But you could. The bag was great for everything, man. You could cook in it, you could poop in it, you could bathe in it. You know, if you cut it lengthwise and fold it down, you should shave it.
Yeah.
If you cut it lengthwise, put your soap in there, you can bathe in it.
Right.
If you cut it like a Kleenex box and open it up, you should be able to poop in it. Because if you couldn't,
for some reason, you couldn't
do it on the ground.
If you had to.
Yeah. But, I mean, this thing was so versatile.
It was.
You probably make shoes of this stuff. Or underwear.
No, I'm sure the Filipinos, man, they made aircraft carriers out of it in the Philippines. They could do anything with anything. What is that? What is that skyscraper made out of? It's made out of MRE boxes. What? That's like a 30-story building. Yeah, it is. We know how to do shit down there. I used to keep the cocoa. What else did I eat? I would eat cocoa,
peanut butter,
applesauce, peanut butter, crackers, and cheese. There wasn't a whole lot
in
the early MREs.
Going to the field. Gorilla cookies, my favorite.
Yeah, they were good.
People always ask, well, why do you name them Gorilla cookies? Because they were two chocolate cookies that were fused together that even a gorilla couldn't pull them apart.
You couldn't.
So we called them, hence the name, Gorilla cookies.
They were, and they never came any other way than melded together. Yeah, you get your.
Yeah, I don't even know why they made two cookies. They just made one.
Yeah.
But they were always offset from one another. So you know they were two cookies when they first started. But now they became one.
And you couldn't pry them apart. You'd see a guy with a broken K-bar, and you're like, oh, he tried to pry apart your Gorilla cookie?
Yeah.
Man, my knife busted.
You fool tried to separate a Gorilla cookie? You know, in my whole time in the Marine Corps, I never saw anybody successfully. Now, when I say, like, separate them perfectly, there's chocolate on both ends and not a crack or something, you know? I never saw them separated perfectly. Now, I saw them separated with force. Like, we would take a K-bar, put it in beside, and then take something and strike the blade and then kind of do a diamond cut down the middle.
Yeah.
But it never ended.
Like, you're talking about, like, the separation that you have between your hamburger patties when you put a little parchment paper down there, right? That kind of separation, and they're all clean. Yeah, the cookie never came apart clean. Although, you know what? I'll tell you what.
Yeah.
In the early 90s, they redid the MREs, and they tried to improve them. And I was a big fan of the spaghetti MRE. I was a big fan of the spaghetti MRE. And I added that to my repertoire. Applesauce, cocoa. I would have, like, hundreds of cocoa packs. And I would make cocoa soup on an hourly basis because that would be sometimes all I would eat if Lance Corporal Calhoun did not get me a spaghetti MRE, sorry sir, somebody took it. I'd be like, God damn it, who took the spaghetti MRE? Calhoun, you go find it. I'd be like, sir, they know they did it on purpose. I'm like, all right, we're field, Dan. As soon as we get home, sir, we won't be home till 02. That's right. Don't take the MRE. Do not take the spaghetti MRE.
Spaghetti was good when it first came out. Yeah, that was my favorite. Yeah. That and the, like, Chicken a la king. Beef stew. My favorite, you're going to laugh about this, but my favorite of all time was the dehydrated beef patty.
You know what? I am going to laugh at that because nobody ate those things, and I learned how to eat them only later in life when somebody taught me how to do it.
Showed you how to cook everything.
Showed me how to hydrate it, showed me how to cook it, and then showed me how
to... the beans and the cheese and the crackers.
Showed me how to...
Freaking gourmet food.
Show me how to Tabasco it and sauce that shit up. Yeah, that was advanced cooking. Hold on.
I learned that. Luckily, I learned that real young. You know, in my canteen cup, you know, you heat up the water, pour that into the beef patty, let it hydrate. Meanwhile, you're cooking the beans up.
Nice.
You're adding the tomato ketchup in there for the spice. All that stuff, like maybe 4 tablespoons of water to keep it liquidy, soupy, and then you put your cheese in there, and then your cracker, and then you crumble the beef patty in there when it's nice and soft. And that meal,
that was like a legitimate meal. That was like a legitimate hot meal.
Yeah.
But it took years. Here's an email from a Vietnam Marine. Needless to say, Vietnam Marines recoil at, when we say that they're crazy, Vietnam. When we say Vietnam guys, implied in there is that they're kind of crazy because the truth would be told, they are, okay? But, again, it's their right because they got treated like shit, so they've got kind of a visa card on craziness. But, anyway, you're spoiled. You should have had sea rats. Could do anything with Tabasco sauce. First ones I got at Quantico had green Lucky Strikes from World War II. But see, they used to have shit like M&M's and Hershey's chocolate bars and Lucky Strikes. Those are sea rats, man. Spam?
Yeah, but we would know this. It was either the peanut butter or the cheese you could actually light on fire for fuel. You used to crack the can and you could use it like a candle, like the fat or something. I forget if it was the peanut butter or the cheese. Actually, it was flammable. Which you should go what?
What? I never
saw that meeting is flammable.
I only saw canned sea rats a few times. You know, people had leftover cases in 1984 when I got to the fleet. But what was the larger one? I can't remember what the name for the larger one was, but it was
K-Rat?
Yeah, it was like K-Rat. It was like
C-Rats
and K. It was like K-Rats or something. I ate those. It was a larger block of food. But they weren't freeze drying stuff to take to the moon. Like they were making food, and the food that they made in World War II is now in your supermarket, right? Not for freeze-dried Yule Gibbons bullshit.
We got sea rats overseas by accident, and we ate them. And we were more like this is cool, man. You know, the little cans, the little box, and everything was in there. You know, they didn't have cigarettes. I don't know if they've been sanitized. That was the first thing that people were looking at, like, oh, dude, these things got cigarettes in them. We opened up, no cigarettes. We're like,
Lucky.
Maybe these are the sea rat alpha ones, the A1 sea rat.
No, you know what happened?
But
some lance corporal stole all the cigarettes and then sold them.
Some quartermaster
went
through every case and took every cigarette out of it.
and stole it to set up his empire. You know what? And let me tell you, there was a macho thing in the Marine Corps, all right? And you used to buy it at the PX. And they sold it everywhere, all right? And it would hang on your dog tags, right? So you'd see some salty dog, and what would he have? He'd have his John Wayne, little can opener, hanging on his dog tags.
No reason to hell own it because the sardine cans and the everything else came with the automatic little, key, or they just came top.
It was a holdover.
But yeah,
it was a holdover.
I had one when I was a boot.
It looked
I had a John Wayne.
It looked macho though. It looked
never used.
It looked badass, hanging on your dog tags like you're a man. What's that? It's my John Wayne.
Oh, and I think the actual name of it was like a P-38, because that was a board question too, like the stupid boards, what is the P-38 that's never flown? First arc, that would be the John Wayne. Correct, ladies and gentlemen. You're going right to the top.
You know what?
With all this knowledge that you have of the Marine Corps, man, we are going right to the top.
I got officially.
What is in the ball and the tap of a flagpole? A pair of matches and a bullet. The matches are to burn the flag and then just shoot yourself afterwards. Correct. No, you know what's in the top of a ball and on the top of a flagpole? Air. Nothing. They're hollow. I've opened one up.
Great. Yeah.
So they lied to me back then, too.
Just to see, you know what? You're right. It is the P-38.
Yeah.
That is awesome. You know what? I got officially counseled as a second lieutenant. I threw a fit after we were doing the beauty contest for, I don't know if it was Marine of the Quarter or it was Meritorious Promotion of Corporal. And I had a Marine by the name of Dave Benson from St. Cloud, Minnesota. Benson was a big dude. He was funny, and he used to talk shit about the Army all the time. The Army, they're always in trucks. They're always mecked up. We are walking. They are winning. We are losing. He was a funny dude, and he was one of those big lance corporals that could carry, like a 20-mule team. Benson would pull the 20-mule team, right? He was that guy. So Benson was the best lance corporal in the company. Right. And it was hard to make. I mean, there was guys like 24, 28 months time in grade as an 0311 Lance Corporal to try to get corporal. You know, I mean, they were Lance Corporal for a long ass time. And, but Benson was the best Lance Corporal in the company and everybody knew it. When he didn't finish first with all the, how many inches above the knee, is the WM's hemline? What
yeah,
the
I was gonna say that.
Fuck?
So you get all these dumb questions,
yeah.
And then I'll go,
Benson finished.
How many inches is the hemline of the skirt of the Marine, above and below the knee, can be? You're like,
right.
Huh?
Benson doesn't. He doesn't. He's not going to be one of our two representatives. And I quit. I quit the board. I was so pissed. And I walked in my XO said, Mac, you can't do it. I'm like, bullshit. Benson's the best. He, every day in his job, Benson's the best. This beauty contest bullshit is fucked up, and we shouldn't be fucking doing it. The job of the staff NCOs and the NCOs of this company are to get Benson, spool him up for the board, get his uniforms right, and get him promoted. That's how we do it. And we're supposed to link their hard work that they do every fucking day, not this chicken shit nonsense. So that got me in the company commander's office the next day.
Or get the question of, can you explain the regulations for the haircut? You sit in the barber chair and you say, haircut, please, and they cut your hair.
Yeah. And when when they ask you if you want the flame, say yes, because if you say no, they're going to think you're a pussy. Yeah. Even though you don't know what the flame is, you have no idea what the flame is, you just take it, because that's the kind of shit we do. Yeah, Mac, I'm not going to put this in writing, but I'm going to counsel you officially. Don't ever walk out of a board again. And then I said, but guess what? We changed it after that. It wasn't right away, but it was a few months later. And then when I was a company commander, they held a beauty contest. And I told them, I don't want a beauty contest. I want you guys as a group to rank. You tell me the top three Lance Corporals, okay? And then we're going to get them in here, and then you're going to get them ready for the battalion board because we can send three guys up to it, okay? And they held the fucking board. They held the board, and then my acting first sergeant dismisses like all the NCOs and the staff NCOs that were in on it, and then he comes in and goes, hey, sir, here's the results of the board. And I see the questions. I see the results. And I said, okay, this is your recommendation? He said, yes, sir. I said, did you hear my guidance? And he just froze. I said, go get everybody right now. Stop them from leaving. And it's like 1,800. And he looks at me and goes, sir, I said, you heard me. Do it right fucking now. Run. Because I'm reconvening the board. So they all get in. Mm-hmm. I said, what was my fucking guidance? I didn't want this shit, okay? So I said, this is how it works. And, like, I got all my staff NCOs. I point to a staff sergeant. Who's the best Lance Corporal in the company? Well, it's either this guy or this guy. I point to him. Who's the best Lance Corporal in the company? well, it's either this guy or this guy. Who's the best? And then, and I said, okay, why are their fucking names not on here? Well, so-and-so's 5 pounds overweight. I said, I don't give a fuck. PTM, that's your job. Our job is to link hard work to these kind of opportunities. You got it? They're like, yeah. And I said, now get the fuck out of here. I know. And then I got one note came up to me. Sir, we had a board and we recommended. Look, that's a recommendation. Do you think you're the commanding officer of this fucking company? Let me tell you how I know that's not the case. I was pissed, man. I hated those fucking things. So anyway, a little bit of therapy for old Mac today. Don't do boards. It's not fair. It doesn't reward the right thing because you're supposed to look around and say, yeah, I know they hate Musselman because he doesn't drink with them. He's the best Lance Corporal in the company. Get his ass promoted now. That's what leaders are supposed to do. But we used to do this. Right. What does the hemline have to do with anything? Well, it has to do with something now in a rival company. But at the time, didn't have anything to do with what we did. And that's
right.
Yeah.
Right.
So anyway.
Or what's in the truck of the flagpole. Nothing. You dumbass.
Where does that legend come from?
I don't know. I have no idea. Matches, instructions how to burn the flag properly, and a bullet to shoot yourself in.
Yeah, first of all, why am I going to shoot anybody?
Yeah, I'm not going to shoot myself.
Yeah, I mean, I might have to go to prison.
And if I had a gun, wouldn't it be already loaded? What the hell? What if it was the wrong caliber? And those trucks were made way back then, so it probably got 45s. You don't have 45s, so what does it do for me? Did someone go up there and replace it with a 9mm? What are we talking about?
Just my luck. Here, I burn the flag.
Yeah.
I got one round. It's 45. Now I can't even shoot myself.
Yeah, the division commander holds staff me and go, okay, here's 55 new 9mm. I want all the 55 trucks in there.
Division replaced. Yeah. Was that never the case? That's all urban legend?
That's all urban legend, yeah. Another lie being told to us.
That's a good one because everybody, what's really inside the gold ball on top of flagpole?
Air.
The what's it called? Finial ball? The finial ball. Yeah, I know it as a truck like Mike does. It's simple. Scale the flagpole. At the top of the pole sits a golden sphere. The finial ball. Inside is a razor blade, a match, and a bullet. You must use the razor blade to cut the stars and stripes from the flag, the match to burn the remains, and the bullet to defend the base or to shoot yourself, depending on the circumstances. The truth is it's empty.
Sucker.
That's awesome, though. I don't know where that one ranks relative to Treufenhund. Treufenhund is pretty, that's like up there. But this one is a good one. This one's up there with Captain Kangaroo, like was ashore on Iwo Jima, and Mr. Rogers wore that sweater all those years to cover up all his tattoos from his 22 confirmed kills as a Navy SEAL in Vietnam. Okay. That's the shit drunk people make up and then spread to other people that are stupid.
Yeah.
And, here you go.
Yeah, and we buy it.
We do buy it. We love it. Are you kidding me? We love it. But Treufenhunden, that is different. That's different. It's our part of our very, very sacred mythology. So, Devil Dog, that's right. All right, what are you doing today? Anything exciting?
No, some World Cup.
World Cup? Yeah, you didn't give us a World Cup report. Oh, is France and Belgium playing today?
Won.
Peru.
No, they play, or Belgium and Germany play Thursday.
No,
Denmark today.
Oh, France and Denmark. That'll be a good one.
It's already over. 0-0. 0-0.
0-0? I like the way you say zero. For the rest of us rubes, we can understand it.
Yeah.
All right. What else?
Peru beat Australia, right. And France and Denmark, 0-0.
All right. Anything else significant we should know about? The president, one is a Supreme Court case for that he actually has the power, and it is constitutional for him to enact by executive order, a travel ban. How about that? Laid to rest, finally.
Yeah.
All these finally. Months, finally. Okay. All right. Thanks for the visit.
All right, man. I'll talk to
you. All right. See ya. That is the one and only, Michael Musselman. Microwave gourmet food. Who would have thunk? Not sure where these subjects come from, but here's an email. Mac, this program makes perfect sense to anybody with ADD. The way you two cut back and switch topics and then never go back to what you were talking about is simply something only people that are similarly minded can relate to. I myself have no issue. I was listening once in the car through my phone, and my wife was listening, and she said, "Why can't these guys stay on one topic?" My response, because there's more than one topic for them to discuss. We always heated sea rats with C4. C4 is pretty good. Yeah. We used to eat, you know, one of the great, when MREs became, you know, I don't know that we really perfected the dehydrated piece of the food when we started doing it. If you went to the field for more than a week, I mean, you would come home constipated. You can take a crap if your life depended on it. Crap, now or you're dead. Sorry, shoot me. Poof. Yeah, I mean, you'd be so constipated, you couldn't crap. So people took to what was light in packages that you could make in the field with water by heating up water. Ramen. Yeah, the Marine Corps was largely sustained by top ramen. That's right. And they had their own little gourmet recipes for top ramen. And C4, although we didn't have that much C4 hanging around. In Quantico we did, so we would use it a little bit there. But, you know, not like in Vietnam, the way the criminal element used us. The ugliest sea rat. This sounds disgusting. Ham and lima beans. Known as ham and motherfuckers. The what is the historical origin of that sea rat? How does lima beans get turned in? How does ham and lima beans get turned into ham and motherfuckers? See what a wonderful culture it is? It's awesome. Who else would have food named like that? Nobody. Hammond what? That's funny. That is hilarious. Oh, here's some more county fair stuff. Up in Idaho, this is from Montana man who's been missing in action since he went hunting. The last we heard of him, he was looking... I'm not going to attribute it. I can't attribute it. But do you remember when we were talking about somebody that we knew was looking for a recipe for homemade explosives? I'm not saying that it was Montana Man, but we have not heard from Montana Man since that happened. So I'm not saying there's any correlation between the two events, but there might be. Anyway, he's Montana Man, right? So he's rolling around Montana and Idaho. But Idaho Man doesn't sound like cool. Like if you're Montana Man, like yeah, and you wear costumes. See, like he has this pirate costume he wears. He's got this kind of goatee now. He's got this red goatee, and he's got this poofy. Remember the shirt Seinfeld wore when he went on the Tonight Show or something like that? Yeah, the poofy shirt. Yeah, I thought, and so I saw him wearing it in a picture, and I thought it was a costume party. He got irritated with me. Anywho. They're having a demolition in Salmon, Idaho. That, and he says, all the crazies come out for that. You know what? If there's that's designed to bring there's certain events that if you do them, it will bring the crazies out. Any time that a quality demolition derby is going on, rest assured, it will be a gathering of the clans, okay? Yeah. It will be a gathering of the clans of the cave bear. Exactly. With all rights and courtesies and customs thereunto pertaining. And when the cave bear clan assembles, that's right, grab your small children and your animals. Yeah. Makes the testicle festival look like a White House dinner. That's actually fun. That's actually funny. Yeah, the testicle festival, that's a big deal. Yeah. I think they're like bull balls or something like that. That's a big deal, though. It's a big cultural event up there. But, yeah. Demolition Derby. Makes the testicle festival look like a White House dinner. That's a pretty good line. All right. Montana Man. Yeah. You've been missing. Anyway. All right. thanks for listening today. In this abyss of shit. And I know it's a contradiction, okay? Shit-filled abyss. Abyss has no bottom. How could it be filled? Yeah, that's how much shit is in the nation's capital. It can fill an abyss. But, Mac, think about it. Okay, think about it. Give it some thought. Yeah. Even an abyss cannot contain the shit in our nation's capital. It's disgusting. So, in spite of that, though, there's awesome people around this country. All right? Not too many of them in the media. One less that Charles Krauthammer passed away. So do yourself a favor. Get his book. Read it. Make yourself smarter. I heard a guy, Jesse Waters, used to be a producer on Bill O'Reilly's show for years, and he told a funny story about Krauthammer. He is now on a show that Fox calls The Five. And it's on at 5 o'clock Eastern time on Fox. Anyway, he told a story about one of his jobs was to produce the segment that Charles Krauthammer was going to join Bill O'Reilly. So he would have to call Krauthammer and say, okay, Bill wants to talk about this so he can be prepared. What are the points that you're going to make? And so he would call Krauthammer with a subject, and then he'd call him the following day, and he'd write down all his points. And he said, and then I used to go to bars, and the issue would normally be something that was going on, and I would say everything that he told me to say. Everything that Krauthammer said, I would argue those points. He said, and I was never wrong. I was never wrong. But the audio that I want to play, I didn't play today, I'll play it tomorrow. The audio that I wanted to play talks about how he became the guy that he was. Raised in an Orthodox Jewish family, when he decided he would not be Orthodox Jew, his father's response and how that shaped his life. When he talks about God, right? In fact, the day he was paralyzed, I want to say he had two books with him. He was in medical school. One is The Anatomy of the Spinal Column. Yeah, no shit is no shit. Yet, and in the audio that I'm going to play, it comes off a video. In the video, he still has the books. These are the books that were sitting at the side of the pool. And I want to say the other book was something like, I think it's Viktor Frankl's The Meaning of Life or something like that. He had those two books with him at the pool the day he was left a paraplegic. And he tells a story about he knew exactly what happened to him. He dove in a pool head first, and he was supposed to go to class, didn't go to class, went to play tennis, dove in a pool, hits his head, and he said, and when I did it, I knew exactly what happened, and I couldn't move. And he talks about the feeling of dying, And then he was rescued from the bottom of the pool. So, yeah, I'd tell you, get his book. And if you're bored sitting around, Krauthammer, K-R-A-U-T-H-H-A-M-M-E-R. And just go through some of the different segments that he's that he did, and you'll get smarter. Trust me. All right. All that said, Jeremiah Workman, you'll hear him about 13 minutes of an interview that I did with him. That is the most powerful segment of an interview that I've ever done. And it includes the most powerful thing I've ever heard anybody say, I think, in an interview to me. And so you'll hear him. And again, the reason is, right, the shit-filled abyss can be demotivating. I know it demotivates me, but that's not America, okay? America is all the different communities around the nation that are trying to do good things, all the people that don't see race, they don't see sexual orientation, they don't see that. They see people that need help, and they help them. That's the America that I know. That's the United States military that I served in that didn't give a rip about any of that. All it gave a shit about was, can you do your job? All right, can you do your job? When people's lives are on the line, can you do your job? Will you do it? And so that's the country I know. What I see on TV is not the nation I know. And I know that's sad, but it's just a fact of life. Okay, it's just a fact of life. So, in fact, while the program was on, I saw some video of the president was in South Carolina yesterday, I think, at a rally. And CNN reporter by the name of Jim Acosta, who, if you ever watch the president or White House press briefings, Acosta is one of the chief antagonists of the president, of the administration, all of that. So now he's trying to do his report, and you have the crowd turning on him, yelling, go home, go home, go home. So what happens to guys like Jim Acosta now that if people don't agree with your point of view, we don't respect your right to have it, we run you out of restaurants, we run you out of theaters, we surround your home. At some point, what happens to Jim Acosta? Somebody going to beat the shit out of him? And that's the danger of a uncivil United States. And that's the danger of people like Nancy Pelosi, who when somebody that is in the House of Representatives, who's a Democrat, who Nancy Pelosi nominally serves as a leader for, when that person doesn't get called out for inciting that harassment, and I would tell you that leads to vigilantism, then that is quintessentially what's wrong with our country. Chuck Schumer yesterday, spot on. The only thing he didn't do was say her name. Okay, Nancy Pelosi, shame on her. Shame on her. So our nation's better than what we see on TV, and I think we need reminders of that. And so a little inspiration this week. You'll hear Krauthammer tomorrow. Jeremiah Workman is everything that's good and right about our country. Everything that's good and right about our country. So, with that said, you'll hear him here in a little bit. Thanks for listening on a Tuesday. All Marine Radio is over, and we're almost out. I got to throw one switch. Out.